This is the eighth reel of a taped interview with Peter McMillan on the 28th of the 2nd, 2003, the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Peter, obviously, we talked a little bit about the winding up of your experience in relation to the last operation. And you mentioned that there was obviously a sense of relief, and presumably there was that sense of relief because very, very few airmen actually made it through.
That's true. Yeah, a lot of my friends didn't come back. You never quite knew what was going to happen. And it was a real relief on the 25th of September when I finished my last operation, and it would have been the finish of my second tour. Up in Italy. It was a great relief to think that operations had finished. I suppose that for the time that I'd been away in operations, you're living on your nerves for most of the time. It wasn't very nice to make friends and then find that they weren't with you. They'd get shot down and that was it. Some of them who got shot down managed to get out of the aircraft and were taken prisoners of war, but not many of our mates managed to do that. I couldn't give you the numbers, but I do know that most of the aircraft, of our aircraft that got lost, the crew went with them. I suppose finishing operations was a pretty big relief.
You mentioned that your squadron continued on into other fields. And obviously, we're talking the end of 1944, and we've spoken a little bit about some of the liberation that were going on around the place. But the general feeling, obviously, that the war was going away in the Allies.
That's true. The squadron continued on in operations in Italy, supporting the military. I think that they managed to get through up into Austria, but then they were dragged back and taken off operations too. I don't quite know what happened to them then, but I know that most of the mob were sent back to Britain, and some of the Australians were repatriated back to Australia. In my case, when I finished my tours, my second tour, they put me into hospital in Naples for adjustments to my spine. And I was there for a couple of months, I think. It wasn't a particularly nice time with the things that they did to me. And then the doctor in charge was so concerned that he decided to repatriate me home to England for the experts over there to have a go at me. So I was put onto a boat sometime in, I think it would have been December or early January, 45, and we set sail for England. I landed in Gourock in Scotland at the coldest winter that they had ever had for ages and ages and ages, and I cannot remember myself ever feeling so dreadfully cold. I certainly wasn't prepared for this type of situation because I didn't have any really warm clothes. They put us on a train to send us back down to London from Gourock, and my visions of the train were from the train were of vast snow on either side of the line, higher than the carriages, which had been bulldozed out of the way so that the trains could go through. Inside, you couldn't look out the window properly because of the horrible condensation and ice that was there from all the mob that were on the train. Included on the train, there must have been hundreds of other people who were repatriated back to Blighty. Most of them were airmen. A lot of them were wounded. Eventually, I got down to southern England and was put into a hospital, and I don't know where it was. I cannot recall anything about that.
I mean, being on the train, obviously, the wounded and that's those people on board realised that their war was over.
Oh, yes, yes. They were very happy about that, but they couldn't stop grizzling about the cold. No, they were very happy that the war was finished as far as they were concerned, and yet it hadn't been finished in Europe at that stage. A number of the airmen were being posted back to England and would probably not realise it at the time, but they were posted to squadrons that went on to bomb in Europe. Two of my friends were involved in that. They survived and came home. The majority of the blokes that were there on the train would have been British. There were a number of Australians. I got posted in the Finnish to this hospital where I was put in for pretty close to 3 weeks, after which I was taken out to be have a sort of convalescent leave at Lord Courtauld Thompson's mansion down in Dorney Wood, wherever that was, but it was absolutely beautiful. Courtauld Thompson wasn't there, but his butler was in charge, and he gave us a ball. He took us all over the place. He had extra petrol. There were six of us who were repatriated into this wonderful house, mansion, and we went to all sorts of places that one would perhaps normally not have been to. Windsor Castle, I can't think of the others, but he took us all over the shop, a very nice old boy. After that, I was sent back into London for a medical and then posted down to Brighton into a hostel there, along with several hundred other Australians who are all waiting to be repatriated home.
What were your impressions of London at this time?
It was, I'd never ever been there before, so it was an original sort of situation to me. I was rather overwhelmed. I thought it was a dirty place. It had been snowing, and when the snow melted, it was a dirty, filthy, black sludge. When the sun did come out and things began to look a bit better, it was a rather delightful place. And by April, it began to get a little bit interesting because there were all sorts of beautiful gardens around, crocuses growing in the lawns, coming up through the little bit of snow that was left, and there was green. The other thing that did sort of take away a bit were the V2 bombs that dropped. And these were bloody great huge things that just appeared and blew up. And on several occasions, I was fairly close to them. There was a market that I used to take a bit of interest in. It was full of all sorts of beautiful flowers and meats and things like that. And I used to go there with an expatriate Australian woman who used to take several of us to the markets to do her shopping. And on one occasion, I was late in getting to her, and she thanked me profusely for saving her life because one of these big bombs had hit the market and wiped out a whole lot of people. It was pretty grim.
Well, I was interested in discussing this at the latter stage of the war and obviously the buzz bombs and the V2. The general description of a V2, is it possible that you can recall what it was like to have them flying?
I never saw the V1s. They were the bombs, the flying bombs. I didn't see any of those. These were just an enormous missile that blasted off from Germany and went up I don't know how many miles and then arced down and dropped into London. I never ever saw them. Nobody ever saw them. But they knew they happened. There's a magnificent film that many, many years later came out called Broken Arrow, which showed them building these huge bombs and how the Royal Air Force came to put a finish to the place where they manufactured them in the mountains somewhere. They were huge things, but I never saw one, but I saw what they did and I heard what they did and made a bloody big bang.
Well, presumably that would have affected the general morale of people wandering around in broad daylight having these things go off suddenly.
They were pretty philosophical about it, quite frankly. The general feeling was, well, it can't happen to me, which was fair enough. There's not much you can do about it. The people that I knew were very brave about it, I suppose. I got friendly with a number of people in Australia House in London, and I used to go out to dinners and parties with them. They never ever mentioned the V2 bombs, the burstings or anything like that. No.
I get this impression from people that I interviewed that the spirit was still there and the party would continue on.
That's
during
right.
Blitz even.
That's right, yeah. Well, it apparently it did go on because people were out and wandering about, not worrying about anything, and as far as they were concerned, Hitler could go jump in the bloody lake. No, I think the feeling was very good. The other thing that used to really get me in was after being posted down to Brighton was the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of four-engine bombers that flew over every day supporting the crew that had invaded Europe. There must have been, I suppose there would have been thousands that went over. There were American bombers and night flying bombers. They were everywhere. And as well as that, there were a lot of very new Mustang fighters and things like that that used to go over as well. When the Allies got a good foothold in Europe, the fighter planes were based over in Europe and they used to fly up and support the bombers. I don't think that there were ever any German fighters having a go at our people around about that time. I think that the German Air Force was more or less finished. We were in Brighton for quite a while. A lot of my colleagues were there from other bombing squadrons that came from Italy and the Middle East, but none of them came from 223 Squadron or 55 Squadron, which were Royal Air Force squadrons. There were no Australians repatriated home, as far as I know, from those two squadrons. Most of the boys that were with me came from squadrons that were based in Italy, and they would have come from Halifax, bombers and other big four-engine bombers that they had over there. They were repatriated back.
The social time that you had there in Brighton?
Oh, there were dancers. That was a funny one. The Brighton Hall, it was absolutely huge. It was as big as one of our football fields, I suppose. And every night, how they managed it, I don't know, they had dancers there. The females were supplied from, I suppose, from volunteers. And if you wanted to dance for the girl, you bought a ticket and went up and presented it to somebody in, they called it the stable, where all these girls were sitting, and you presented your ticket, and the girl came over and took it and said, yes, that's mine, and she had a dance with you. And then she'd go back and sit in there and wait for the next play. That's how it used to work. There were no real liaisons made there, because everything was controlled very thoroughly. The bands were made up from Royal Air Force people. I can remember, though, one particular occasion when Vera Lynn came in and was at the hall. And, of course, that was a very popular move. That was one time I can well and truly remember.
And did she speak or address to the crowd? Or was
she just sang. Or? She got up and sang. No, it was terrific.
What was the response?
Oh, very popular. Terrific. Yeah. It was really something.
I'm interested, obviously, these performers, you just see them performing these songs. But the real touch that they gave the songs, the real...
Well, I can't answer that, really, because all I know is it was very beautiful and we thoroughly enjoyed it, and it went over very well with everyone. It was... we'd heard her on the radio, but then to see her in person up on the stand was really something.
These performers obviously giving morale to the troops. Well, I'm wondering how they actually did that in relation to the songs that they sing. How would they...
Can't answer that. I'm not going to attempt to. I wouldn't know. I really wouldn't. But they're pretty dedicated. We had fellows on the squadron who used to get up and, in impromptu moments, put on an act in the mess. And some of them were absolutely talented, marvellous fellows, which were in their wrong place as gunners or operators or pilots or whatever. And these fellows, when they went back to England, I guess they might have gone back into the shows. No, it was amazing. The other thing that did happen to me was one of the girls that I crewed up with in London was a daughter of a very great friends of the family back in Northam in Western Australia, and Margaret Williams. And she had a job in the Air Force over there as a liaison officer. And she took me in tow and took me round the countryside, and we went to Canterbury Cathedral and to a place in Guildford and all sorts of spots all over the place. We used to take off. She had a special permit to drive, she used to drive me round, and I set up like Jackie, and she was the chauffeur. And we used to stay the nights at pubs, and this created big interest back home, because they couldn't imagine me staying in the pub with Margaret. That just wasn't on. But however it was, we behaved ourselves, and we had a lovely time. She showed me some of the countryside that I never ever would have thought of seeing. I can remember going into one area where there were thousands of acres of little trees with flowers. I think they could have been apple trees, apple blossom, just acres of it. And we went to another place down on the coast somewhere where it was a coastline that you never could have imagined anybody trying to come ashore, and she said that was where the Germans were going to try and land to invade England, which would have been pretty bloody stupid.
In relation to the coming of the end of the war, and obviously the chaps that did go back to England, there was often, I understand, this sort of temptation to try and avoid being sent back, to stay around a bit, to enjoy England.
Some of our blokes did, and a number of them eventually stayed there, but I didn't know them, quite frankly. I didn't know them well. Our main aim was to get back home.
So you didn't feel, you'd come all this way, you'd seen all these things, you might stick around and have a bit more of an adventure in England.
Another thing that did happen was that we were given leave. It was called pre-embarkation leave. For 10 days. And so a mate and I got train tickets from the powers that be and went up to Scotland again. It was a bit of a different situation then. It wasn't as cold. And the only thing I can remember about that trip was the old castles we saw. And going over, it must have been, I suppose, on the east coast. I don't know, I can't remember the name properly. But it was a place that we stayed at, and it had palm trees, and it was, the climate was warm, and it was just incredible. It was so totally different to anything that you could possibly imagine. And afterwards, when I got home and sort of thought it over and discussed it, apparently it was a place where the Gulf Stream hit up in Scotland. That was the only time I can remember anything about it. I guess I was quite frankly not really with it. I wanted to get out. And then the time came and we were put on to the New Amsterdam. Now, I don't know where the hell we left for. Yes, there's another thing that happened. Yes, in England there were three old aunts of ours, Macmillans, and I went to visit them. And they lived in the Isle of Wight, and it was a really amazing experience. Their average age then would have been over 70. And these three old ducks put me up and really mothered me and gave me a hell of a time. And I stayed with them for a week nearly, which was really almost enough. But they took me over the Isle of Wight and showed me all sorts of places. We did it on buses. And the three old aunts were rather marvellous. They didn't last very long. After I'd left, I think two died and the other one kept going. She used to keep in touch with me and I used to write to her from WA. We got put onto the New Amsterdam, and I think we must have left from Portsmouth or somewhere like that. It was an uneventful type of trip. It took us quite a while to make it home, mainly because um, 1945, I think the Japs were still, well, the Japs were still in go, on the go, and we had to go right away down south to keep away from the shipping plane, shipping lanes.
Have you been in England at the end of the war, in Europe in any way, or have you come back prior to VE Day?
Oh yes, this was prior to VE Day. Yeah. Mm. Oh yeah. This was the war hadn't finished in Europe then. It finished when we were on the New Amsterdam on the way home. I think it might be in my book here somewhere.
May of 45 then on New Amsterdam. Mm. What were the conditions like on board New Amsterdam?
Dreadful.
Why?
Too many people, not enough room, substandard accommodation, cold.
Food?
The food wasn't so hot. It was not very pleasant.
How did it make you feel given that you'd been away fighting for king and country and they were treating you this way on the way out?
Well, it wasn't only me, it was all the others as well. I mean, we felt pretty jacked off.
A bit close to mutiny, I
would have. We might have liked to have tried to, but no, we weren't very happy at all. It was a beautiful boat, but if you can imagine the sewage system not working properly, and the one lavatory to accommodate for 60 blokes, and that had broken down and used to overflow. Oh my God, no, it wasn't too good at all. I think the New Amsterdam would have been an absolutely perfectly beautiful ship to go on a tour with, but not with all those thousands of people on board. Our trip over originally in the Queen Elizabeth was luxury. And a trip home in the New Amsterdam was something that wasn't quite so hot.
Were you able to keep your spirits up at all? How did you pass the time?
I can't tell you that. I used to think we'd pass the time in drinking. There was plenty to drink. And that's one thing, is to just settle down and booze, mainly gin. Gin and ginger beer. That was the thing that we used to do. I can't really imagine what we did. There was a library on board. I used to read quite a bit. Otherwise, I can't really remember what we did on the bloody New Amsterdam.
Did you talk about it? What you might do when you get home.
There were three of us there who were Australians, West Australians, wondering what we were going to do, and I said that I wouldn't have a clue. I thought that I'd get back home and I'd probably have to go back to work in my original job in Dalgetty's. I would have liked to have gone back home to settle in and work with my father on the farm. We discussed all those sorts of things. One of the blokes that was with me, he was an electrician on a squadron, and he was going back to start a business down in the southwest of WA. We're looking forward to doing that. Whether he ever did it or not, I don't know, because I lost touch with him.